you, Americans, and your allies. Armed Forces Radio brings you a special rebroadcast with Victor Young and the orchestra, the Ken Darby Singers, John Nesbitt, and America's beloved baritone, John Charles Thomas.
Deer and the antelope play.
Hello, dear friends. This is John Charles Thomas. Well, here we are again with another half hour of song, story, and music for you men and women in the armed forces of the United Nations. For story, we have John Nesbitt, one of America's best. For music, there's Victor Young and the orchestra. And for song, the Ken Darby Chorus and myself. And now, Vic, with the preliminaries over, let's get started. My first song today is the stirring Invictus.
Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, I bloody, but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishment the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. Just
think of the number of hit songs that have had a tremendous vogue for a month or 2 months and then have been forgotten. It takes an awfully good popular song to survive this grist mill of radio. Stardust is one of them. And here it is, fresh as ever, in Victor Young's arrangement.
Thank you.
A list of the hits Jerome Kern has written through the years would read like a catalog of what's what in American popular music. He is the acknowledged master in that field. And now, in collaboration with Ira Gershwin, he's written a new song which stands a good chance of surpassing in popularity all the others. It's the lovely song, Long Ago and Far Away.
Dreary days are over, life's a four-leaf clover, sessions of depression are through. Every hope I longed for long ago comes true. Long ago and far away, I dreamed a dream one day, and now that dream is here beside me. Long the skies were overcast, but now the clouds have passed. You're here at last. The dream I dreamed was not denied me. Just one look, and then I knew that all I longed for long ago.
Ken Darby has made an arrangement which might be titled Two Roses. He's combined Yankee Rose with the beautiful Roses of Picardy. I think you'll like it.
Yankee Rose, so true. We all love you. We're proud to say you belong to the USA. Yankee Rose we call, the sweetest rose of all. Through strife and care, you're always there. That's why we'll always love you, Yankee Rose.
And misfortune's bitter winds may blow the clouds of war across the blue and red and white of freedom's glowing emblem of the brave and true.
Far away. Roses,
darkest night. Here's my hand and heart, I'll do my part, and so will every Yankee till we crush our foes. You will shine forever, Yankee Star.
Now that we come to the time for another story from the passing parade, I suppose I should say something to introduce John Nesbitt's subject for today. But when John and I got our heads together over it this morning, we decided it covered a little too much ground to describe in a sentence. So I'll just say John Nesbitt.
For this story, as was the case last week, I'm going to have to ask you to make a tremendous journey. In fact, you will have to get on your Buck Rogers spacesuit and climb into an interplanetary rocket ship and take a journey with me out past the moon and beyond Mars and Venus and Saturn and out into the furthest reaches of space and at the same time go back through time for 100,000 years. For we are now going to witness a catastrophe, 1 billion times worse than any blitzkrieg or earthquake. One so tremendous as to be beyond the power of mind to picture. For this is the death of a world. Sometimes whole stars burst like gigantic firecrackers, flinging 1 trillion fragments into space. We call it a nova. And now that a whole planet has suddenly exploded, we must watch just one of its fragments. And this little part of a world that died is a lump of nickel iron, hurtling through the cold, black, infinite void between the stars. For it has a destiny. For nothing in the universe can really be lost, and it has a rendezvous 90,000 years in the future to meet a green, round planet that we someday will call our Earth. And at perhaps 100 miles a second, that infinitely tiny piece of a star hurtles through the coldness and the blackness of space and comes steadily on its way to a meeting place. And now we are in a green meadow far up the Nile River in Upper Egypt. And a herd of strange long-haired animals with immense curved tusks and enormous heads are huddled together for the night. And suddenly a blazing white light is cast over the earth, and there's a deep roaring sound in the light, like the bellowing of thousands of wild bulls, and the long-haired animals stampede in terror, and out of the heavens screams the ball of fire with a long spray of white sparks streaming out behind it. Like a bullet, it speeds toward the earth, there's a thunderous concussion, and it buries itself under the ground. Its journey has ended and its destiny fulfilled. And now the rain beats down upon our earth. And the thunder cracks over the black, raw mountains. And the Nile becomes a gushing yellow torrent sweeping down to the sea. And at last, the lump of iron is born for us. Uncovered, it lies on the surface. And another few thousands of years go by, and destiny still waits. And now the mastodons are gone, and a race of human beings has come to the valley. Men like us, fair-complexioned men with intelligence on their faces. And they carry tools and weapons made of bronze. And one of them sees the curious round stone, and he tries to lift it. And he's astonished by its weight because he cannot budge it. And he takes out his bronze knife like a boy, and he scrapes at the black coating. The stone is so hard that it turns the edge of his knife. But underneath the coating, he sees a strange glint of bright and silvery metal. It fascinates him. He has an idea. He builds a fire around this remarkable stone, and he heats it red hot. And then he begins beating at the stone with a heavy bronze hammer. And slowly he pounds that fragment of a dead world into the shape of a sword. And he becomes the mightiest warrior in the tribe. And then in the whole nation, for swinging that wonderful silver-gray sword above his head, he can cut another man's bronze weapon cleanly in two. And while this, of course, is only one scientist's speculation on what happened, this same sword, which is 5,000 years old, hammered out of a meteorite, is in existence today. It was found inside the Great Pyramid at Khufu at Giza. And there is evidence that places it 3,000 years before Christ was born. And it's one of the most priceless treasures we know. For it represents that moment in history when man discovered the most valuable metal on earth, which is not gold or platinum, but iron, that lifted civilization into a new and greater age, the age of iron. And it's a curious truth that while 5,000 years ago, a man with the best iron sword won all the battles, to this day, the nation with the greatest supply of iron and its alloy steel is still the dominant nation in warfare. Last year, our steel plants in America alone produced 90 million tons of steel, which is almost twice as much as Germany and Japan and every single one of the Axis-conquered nations put together. 90 million tons. That's the weight of 2,000 battleships. Only 15 or 20 years ago, sheet steel, which is used in the making of nearly every weapon of war, was rolled by hand, and a typical mill with 16 men turned out 8 tons each hour. Today, with continuous rolling mills driven now by electricity, sheet steel comes out of the mills at more than 250 tons an hour, almost 30 times as fast. After Pearl Harbor, the steel industry gave us a mighty weapon by quickly converting strip mills into volume producers of the finest steel plate. Valuable to us as that ancient sword was to the warrior who discovered it. The steel industry is one of the most progressive of all American industries, with hundreds of new processes constantly being developed to produce more of what we must have now, what we need faster and with less work and for less money. And if we took away electricity, the whole steel industry would be crippled overnight. For steel is as necessary to our sons in battle as is the very food they eat. And in human terms, it means a quicker victory and the saving of thousands of human lives. And yet all of this that I've told you now is merely the last chapter in the stupendous adventure which began in the dim past, say 100,000 years ago, when a fragment of a dead world went hurtling through the awful loneliness of space to make a rendezvous with man. Man who had not yet been born into Earth's passing parade.
Thank you, John Nesbitt. And that brings us to Victor Young's Department of Americana. Little brown jug. Victor, let's have it. Lovely song from the Marion Kirby collection, arranged by Hamilton Forrest. Here it is.
He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the big rock. got the whole wide world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands.
He's got the wind.
That gambling man in his hands, he's got that iron man right in his hands. He's got that crap shooting man in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got that little tiny baby in his hands. He's got that little tiny baby in his hands. He's got that little tiny baby right in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands.
He's got
dear friends, we have sung our last song until our next visit with you 1 week from now. Speaking for Vic and Ken and the boys, I say we have enjoyed being with you. And so until next week at this same time, this is John Charles Thomas saying goodbye and God bless.
This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.